Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the Dollar Collapse website. Now, John, you sent us over a couple topics that we are going to cover here, all really revolving around the aspect of maybe some more market weakness or potentially investors getting a little bit more scared or who knows, even less complacent within these markets, because we did see another down day for markets again today, nowhere near this crash scenario that I know some commentators are in a way hoping for, but end of the year, a little bit of weakness. Interesting to see to wrap up this year. Let's start off with central banks, because last week it was a lot about the Fed and the Fed speeding up some of their tapering process and talking about more rate hikes next year. They're not quite at the rate hiking policy or not quite at that time frame yet, but they are starting to push those forward. John, what's your takeaway from the Fed becoming a bit more hawkish?
Yeah. Hey, Corey. Hey, Chad. Well, you know, you have to think of it in kind of relative terms, really, because the Fed is talking about tightening really a little tiny bit over an extended period of time. And even at the end of, you know, next year, when they will have raised interest rates three times, that still leaves us with negative interest rates of around like 3%. Almost across the yield curve, which means we still have insanely easy money going forward. But we are such, or the at least the U.S. financial system is such a debt addicted junkie right now that any lessening of the ease that it's seen for the past few years kind of freaks them out. And we're seeing that today. Although, you know, stocks are way off their lows for the day, they're still down pretty hard. And a big part of that is the anticipation of Fed tightening, even though I still think they'll never get there. You know, before the Fed actually starts raising interest rates, the stock markets will force them to backtrack on that. But it's not just the Fed. This week we had, you know, the Fed related stuff, and also the new variant of COVID that's taking over the world, and lots of places are locking down again and everything. And that's kind of resurrecting horrible memories of 2020. And that has an effect on the financial markets and the economy. And then the U.S. government had this yet another gigantic spending program that was sailing through as of a few days ago, and looked like we were going to spend another, what, $1.7 trillion on stuff. And that just got blocked by one senator. And now it's a next year thing, if it's going to happen at all. So all of a sudden, we're not nearly as accommodative with either fiscal policy or monetary policy. And stocks are still priced for perfection. So you've got kind of a potential train wreck there where, you know, things aren't perfect anymore, but they have to be perfect for this price to be justified. And that's explains a lot of the turmoil that we're seeing in the financial markets right now.
Yeah, John, there's just a lot of unknowns. So it's interesting that, you know, we have that Build Back Better plan kind of stalling out here. There still will probably be something they pass eventually, but with midterm elections next year, they better get on the stick with it. But the markets are also just not sure if the Fed will keep their word, because historically they said things like, hey, we're not even thinking about tightening rates until 2023. And then just at this last week's meeting, they're saying, we think we can probably do two or three hikes next year in 2022. That's a totally different 180 degree message than what they were even saying a few months ago. So what kind of impact that have the remains to be seen. Do you think that's where some of this uncertainty and maybe the weakness this week is coming from? It's just people don't know what's going to happen next year?
Well, yeah, we have to remember the Fed actually hasn't done anything yet. They're just talking. And
they can go back. Haven't they started to pull back on some of their buying, though? Aren't they starting a little tiny bit of tapering. They've started that process.
Well, but remember, tapering is still in the context of us still doing QE. You know, we're still buying government bonds and housing related bonds with newly created currency and dumping it into the market. Maybe we do a little bit less than that, but that's still, you know, it's still not zero QE. And the zero QE point is still a ways away. And then interest rates don't start increasing until after QE is done. So we are still extremely easy. And They may or may not have actually started scaling back QE. I don't know about that. They're talking about it. They have a schedule for it. But so far, it's mostly just talk. And if the stock market has another, you know, week or two of days like this, then that talk will just evaporate. And see, to me, that's the big thing that's out there waiting to happen, is the Fed's final capitulation. When the markets have another taper tantrum and the Fed has to back off, and everybody realizes that this is it. You know, we will never, ever be able to tighten. We'll never be able to raise interest rates to quote unquote normal levels again. So it's easy money from here to the horizon, no matter what happens with inflation. And that's going to be this gigantic psychological change. And what's happening right now is, you know, we don't know for sure that this is the final capitulation coming up, but this is what the beginning of it will look like when the time comes. When the Fed tries to do something extremely modest and then just gets smacked back down by the markets, and you know, the political system comes down hard on the Fed as well, and the Fed is forced to just give up. And that's coming. And this could be the early stage of that.
So, John, one thing we do need to consider, too, is that the S&P is, what, 3.5% off of all-time highs that it just reached last week, too, right? So is it a little early to be calling for the end of the financial system?
This is when it starts. When stocks are wildly overvalued, the Fed tries to tighten, the stocks tank, because they're ready to tank anyhow. You know, even in normal times, stocks should go down by 40% from here, just based on valuation. And they're only as high as they are because the financial system is expecting extremely easy money forever. You take that away and they tank. And then, so I think it's easy to envision a scenario in 2022 when we literally see the end of the financial system as we know it, as it's based on, you know, the eventual return to normal levels of interest rates. Because most financial market participants still expect someday to get back to 6% on the 10-year treasury. And that's kind of tempering their expectations. But take that away, and then what's stopping inflation from just increasing forever? You know, if we're going to continue to increase the money supply by 10 or 15 or 20% a year, which is what it takes to keep the stock market at these elevated levels, and we've already got 6% or so inflation. I don't know what it is in Canada, but in the US, it's 6% official and 12% real, you know, if you calculate it correctly. And if we can't tighten into that, then yes, I think it's game over for this financial system. That, you know, we can't go on if we're never going to be able to get back to normal interest rates. We're just going to have accelerating inflation until it blows up the system.
Well, John, just along that train of thought, you know, there's two different narratives we're hearing. One is that when they get to the point next year where they have to start hiking, when they finish their tapering, you know, providing that happens and that they start their hiking process, that there's going to be the realization that they can never do what you just said and normalize interest rates and get them anywhere close to inflation. Because if the CPI reading was just 6.8%, the PPI reading was 8.5%, even if they pull back some, there's no way they can hike anywhere near there mathematically without being crushed by the debt. That's one narrative. But the second narrative that's the covailing force, and there's a lot of generalists on this track, is as the inflation possibly comes down next year and goes from 6% to 5% to 4% to 3%, and if the interest rates come back up, that maybe they can get it somewhere close. Between those two forces, which one do you think is looking more likely for next year?
Well, I don't think interest rates can ever go back up to levels that would be considered historically normal, just because so much debt is embedded in the low interest rate environment. And if it has to be rolled over at higher interest rates, that raises the interest costs for all kinds of leverage players out there and blows up a lot of them. So, you know, along with the final taper tantrum will be the realization that governments have to bail out everybody in sight if interest rates go up. And then they have to make that decision. Do we, do we let a lot of these guys go bankrupt at the cost of the possible 1930s style debt-driven deflationary depression? or do we bail them all out and just continue to print huge amounts of money? You know, that's going to be the thought process and the dilemma of central banks. And yeah, you know, just with base effects, you could see the rate of inflation decelerate a little bit, but probably not much given wage inflation. You know, once workers realize that they're able to get back some of what's been stolen from them over the last 20 years, it's highly unlikely that they, you know, they get a 4% raise this year and just stop. They're going to want cost of living increases plus whatever it is they can get. And wage inflation is a very big part of the inflation calculation from the point of view of the Fed. And, you know, it's hard to see now that workers have figured out, one, it's possible to unionize, and two, it's possible to strike again and get away with it. It's hard to see how that process stops next year. After 1 year, you know, this is the kind of thing that seems like it's gathering steam. So, you know, some of the supply chain stuff may work itself out. For instance, microchips. They're building microchip plants all over the world. So I think the microchip shortage will go away. But the labor shortage thing doesn't seem to have any end to it. And that could be the thing that drives inflation in the next few years. And it could keep inflation quite high. And then the other thing is panic buying. You know, once people conclude that even if inflation isn't accelerating, if it's at like 6%, let's say, and more or less stays there in terms of the basics of life, everybody starts panic buying. You know, you just go to Costco and buy everything you're going to need for the next 2 years all at once, which pushes prices up further. So you do have inflationary forces at work that won't go away even with base effects and stuff like that. You know, we're still going to see an unstable financial world because of all the money we created in the past. There's no getting around that.
So, John, why do you think this year inflation has taken off? Because we've been hearing that argument over the past decade about some of the money printing that came around 2009 and even past there, that inflation should have been coming. And then all this more money printing that came post-COVID pandemic, and now people are outspending. Companies, businesses are outspending. We even have the GDP Now forecast for Q4 coming in right now, the estimate of over 7%. So a lot of people are out there spending. But why this year? What were some of the factors this year that made inflation finally take off?
Well, three things. One is that things just take longer than you think they're going to. There's no real rhyme or reason to it. It's just when something reasonably seems to be on the verge of happening, the way the universe works is that it doesn't happen right away. It happens later after you've almost given up on it ever happening. That's when it happens. So that alone could explain inflation being higher now when it should have been higher a decade ago because of all the money we printed back then. Second thing is the supply chain disruptions. You know, there's a lot of shortages out there of stuff that maybe, you know, the world isn't experiencing. You know, there's not a shortage of that metal in the ground or those trees over there for lumber or whatever. It's just that it's hard to get from there to here right now, and that makes the prices go up. That, it remains to be seen, whether it's totally temporary or partially temporary or not temporary at all. We'll just have to see how that plays out. And the third thing is that in response to the pandemic, we ran the monetary printing presses at a speed that has never been seen before. You know, we increased the U.S. money supply by, I think it's M2 was 40%. Am I right about that? And the M1 numbers are baffling to me. They've got a chart that shows it going from the M1 base money supply from, and I'm just saying this from memory, but something like from $4 trillion to $20 trillion in the space of a couple of years. So when you throw that much money into the system, you're going to get some kind of an impact from it. And it used to be that it all went into stocks, bonds, and real estate. So we saw financial asset prices going up, but nobody considered that to be inflation. Now the money that's being dumped into the system is spreading out. And so you're getting, oh, okay, milk is more expensive and cars are more expensive and rent is way up. And that's a more normal response to huge increases in the money supply. You know, that's a 1970s kind of thing where everything went up in price. And now we're kind of back to that. But it would be shocking if we increased the money supply by that amount without getting some kind of an inflationary response. So it doesn't seem surprising in any way. What's surprising is that it took this long to get here. And, you know, the question is, what happens next year if we continue to run the printing presses the way we are? Then you would expect an acceleration. And if the Fed is actually going to tighten, then that would have an impact too. And, you know, my contention is that they can't tighten meaningfully without blowing up the financial system. So they're going to have to go back to 2020 kind of monetary policy where they're really increasing the money supply at an accelerating rate. But we will see, you know. The fact is we do have inflation now, and it's shocking a lot of people. And if it goes on for very much longer, it'll change a lot of minds about whether it's temporary or not. And that's a big psychological change. If people decide, oh, this is my life now, and it's not just a one-year thing. This is just how it's going to be. And they start acting accordingly.
Yeah, John, even Jerome Powell has confessed that he's going to have to retire the term transitory, and that it's not really, it's sticking around longer than they thought and more persistent and higher than they thought. But as we move into 2022, based on the crazy last couple of years we've had, where stock markets are at all-time highs, we've got NFTs and JPEG selling for $650,000, we've had cryptocurrencies up and down, we've had the tech sector booming, we've had meme stocks, we've had all these people at home, stuck at home, all becoming day traders, using their stimulus checks to throw money in the market. It does seem kind of end of cycle, especially after 12 years, but it doesn't seem to have any breaks on it. It just keeps going higher and higher. I know that's what people always say at the end, but at the end of a big cycle. But when you look at 2022 and the setup that we just covered with the inflation and the Fed and all of that, what sectors are you bullish on for next year? What sectors do you think could benefit investors if they position them now to have a better year in 2022?
Well, I would be worried about pretty much everything if the Fed actually goes through with the tapering and some of the tightening. Okay. And it's completely possible that they get a little ways into this before the financial markets blow up. And the further they get into it, the higher the likelihood that we have a really serious equities bear market, which could pull down a lot of things. So more than likely, more stuff goes down than up in the coming year. And I include precious metals in that if we have a big stock market crash, because the last two times that happened, gold and silver went down along with everything else, and so did mining stocks. And so I think that's the big risk to precious metals, that they just get sucked down with everything else. In both cases, prior to this one, they bounced back in a V-shaped recovery that made the people who trusted them at the bottom there, you know, who bought the dip, a lot of money. But the dip itself was very painful. So I would be worried about that. And because of that, this might be one of those years, finally, when shorting is the right strategy or the right attitude. In other words, you know, you're not really bearish on any given thing. You just have a bearish attitude about the financial markets, and you start looking for opportunities based on that attitude. You know, if you watch the movie The Big Short, those guys in that movie did something like that. They realized the world was going to blow up, led by the housing market, and they found a way to bet against it. I think there's a decent chance that if inflation continues to run hot, the Fed continues to try to tighten into that inflation, that you get a lot of short opportunities in the year ahead. Although I don't think you should sell your precious metals because of that possibility. Just continue to dollar cost average into gold and silver bullion. Just ignore the financial markets completely and just buy the same amount each month. That's what you should be doing with your precious metals. With your extra cash, you know, I personally am short some stuff and could see getting a lot shorter if some of these trends continue for much longer.
Okay, so taking the short side then, we've heard of a lot of people trying to short these markets, and boy, oh boy, it's been a very tough game because of these markets that keep bouncing back, right, John? So it's a tough bet, or at least it has been over the last decade.
It has been. I'm speaking from personal experience here. As long as the Fed is extremely easy, you know, that money has to go somewhere, and it's liable to go into the things you're shorting. But let them attempt to tighten, and that changes things. So what we've seen the last two times around, you know, in 2008, 2009, and then in 2020, we saw the markets just totally fall out of bed when they perceived that they might not have access to massive amounts of easy money to the horizon. And, you know, remember, the Fed's not the only central bank out there. The rest of the world, a lot of central banks are tightening too. There's a whole long list of central banks that have actually already started raising interest rates. So this is a global story, not just a U.S. story or a Canadian story. And if the trend is now towards monetary tightening, then these markets are at extreme risk, and there's some serious money to be made by shorting them. But, you know, again, you're absolutely right that it's dangerous. Do not bet the rent money on shorting stocks. But if you have some speculative cash sitting there that you want to take some chances with in the hope of a really big return, shorting is better than going long right now.
All right. Well, John, we'll wrap it up here, and we will see what next year brings, because it's going to be a very different year in terms of central bank policy, hopefully in terms of COVID, too. Who knows what's going to happen next year? You're outlining a scenario where shorting and markets falling almost across the board could happen. We'll see what happens, though. But hey, John, good chatting with you today, buddy. Hope you have a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holidays, all of that good stuff. I'm sure we'll be chatting with you in the new year.
Thanks, guys. See you next year.